there, and welcome back to Beyond Health Podcast. This is Brett, and we're back with another episode today. I hope you enjoyed the last episode. It's pretty crazy what's going on out there with sneaky things like land use bylaw changes, etc. But what gives me hope and encouragement is that people are starting to wake up and become aware of these types of things. And then they're going to counselors, to their municipalities, et cetera, and challenging that. And I think that this is really a huge part of what we need to be doing in terms of securing our way of life, if you will, securing farmlands, et cetera. Anyway, for me, the Thorhild County story is a good news story, and I would encourage you to give that a listen. Especially if you're living in rural areas, and also even if you're not in Canada, you know, this type of stuff is happening in places like Australia and elsewhere in the world. So if you are listening to this from somewhere else, go back and listen to the last episode and maybe go and check out and see, you know, what's going on in your community and see if there's stuff like that happening, right? Because as we know, they're trying to sort of strangle out farmland in an effort to usher people in to these sort of engineered foods. Let's just leave it at that. Today's episode is also a good news story, and I was very pleasantly surprised actually with this, because when I went onto Thornbury Acres website and I sort of scoped out what they were doing, and I was like, oh cool, this is a, you know, sort of joint efforts, communal homesteader type of thing. And I didn't actually realize what the full extent was of what they were doing. And so I know that a lot of us, you know, we're trying to do this in our community to some degree. We are in the throes of setting up a communal farm, which is definitely not been without its challenges, that's for sure. We've had a lot of opportunities for land here, but nothing's quite seemed to fit for the community that we're trying to develop. But what Thornbury Acres has really done is they've taken the model to a whole new level. And what I feel like they've done is really given us a blueprint in terms of how to organize ourselves. And so the cliff notes for today's episode are basically that they have a large parcel of land that is farmland. There's wild areas as well and so on. And then what they've done is they have a few dozen families that are all going to live on that land. Their application is in right now, and basically they have a cooperative type of arrangement, but it's a homesteader type of arrangement as well. So cooperative homesteading is really what we're looking at today. And, you know, I've spoken to a lot of people about this over quite a long period, even pre-pandemic, and I've spoken to people about this and looked at different models, you know, so how do we set up intentional communities? It's very difficult because, you know, there's geographical issues. I mean, here in Canada, if you move, you know, 2 or 3 hours north of where we're located and where Thornbury Acres is, you start getting into straight up rock, you know, rock and Canadian Shield and stuff like that. So, you know, if you're trying to set yourself up with a community like this, you really have to do your homework in terms of looking at what you're trying to do, looking at how you might grow food. What does the geographical landscape look like? What do the seasons look like? What are you able to grow? And really sort of dig into that. And one of the things that Thornbury Acres, I think, is really nailed is that they actually have a farmer on hand, right? So that's sort of what their co-op fees go towards, is to have a farmer, a soil scientist, et cetera, on the property to really help people develop their own individual sort of, you know, patch of garden, if you will. And then also to supervise more of the communal space, right? So where they're growing larger quantities of food. So I think that these types of models are going to become quite front and center as we move through here. And I know the people that I've shared this with have definitely been quite interested in what Thornbury Acres is up to. And yeah, so I hope if that is something that you're interested in or you're considering that, definitely go and check out their website. You can click through to the show notes, or you can simply look up thornburyacres.com, I think is the website. Nonetheless, so this was an awesome conversation, and you'll kind of hear, I get more and more excited as the conversation goes on. A slightly shorter episode today as well, which is great. And stay tuned for next week. Next week, I have a friend of mine coming on, and she teaches permaculture. and she is about 95% self-sufficient on her 2 acres with a couple of other families. And so that is a longer conversation, but I had a really, really good time with Angela. So that's going to be coming up after this one. And she actually does have a permaculture course that starts on April 4th or 5th, I believe. So yeah, stay tuned. And if you're interested in learning about permaculture, and especially if you're in the sort of greater Toronto area, but even if you're not, there is an online component with that as well. And as you can tell by the themes of last week's, this week's, and next week's episode, we're really sort of looking into land, food, you know, some security here. All right. So I hope you enjoyed today's episode. And as always, if you do, please leave us a review, subscribe, share this with your friends, your family, and your community. And yeah, click through to the show notes for any other things that might be there. All right. So without further delay, I bring you Harley from Thornbury Acres. Hey, Harley, welcome to the show. How's it going?
I'm doing fabulous. Thank you. Thank you for having me, Brett.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about this. We'll talk about Thornbury Acres, and then we'll talk a little bit about your company as well. But just to sort of preface the whole conversation, I came across Thornbury Acres. I forget who sent it to me. Someone sent it to me and said, hey, you got to check out what's going on here. This is a community, collaborative, homesteading type of farming situation that's in this town in Ontario, which is not very far from me. And as I said before we started recording, we're trying to do something similar. And I know that there's a lot of people out there that are trying to do stuff like this. That's what we're going to talk about today, is Thornbury Acres. How would you, if you were to sort of like give someone the elevator soundbite, how would you describe Thornbury Acres?
What is that elevator pitch? Thornbury Acres is a proposed residential farm cooperative. Thornbury Acres is based upon reigniting and reimagining what a homesteading culture can be, where a collective group of individuals live on a piece of land, pool resources, pool time, and benefit from a crop that they would see from planting through to harvest.
Nice. That is amazing. You just encapsulated everything in like 2 sentences. So perfect. yeah. Well done. And that, you know, I think if those of you watching, you might just want to hit the rewind button and just listen to that again, because I think you just hit all of the high notes there. And there's so many people. I mean, we could touch on many different areas, whether we want to talk about sustainability, whether we want to talk about being more self-sufficient, being more connected to the land, all those types of things. But before we do, you also are a partner at another company. And I would like for people to just get a little bit of a sketch of the background of how this came to be. And are you actually, like, is this live now or is this still in the development stage?
Yeah, we are very much in the development stage. We're in approval phase, or what we call entitlements. The Thornbury Acres came to your doorstep through a website. Community engagement is very important for us. Thornbury Acres is not yet a business. It's not yet a community. It is an idea. It is an idea that we've launched with in the town of Blue Mountains, specifically on a piece of land, 152 acres, and have hired a Cracker Jack project team to put forward our vision for making a meaningful reconnection between man, woman, and child, and the land they live on, and how they can produce and be connected to their own food. That has triggered an incredible response, like from yourself, others in the community. And this is pretty dynamic. I mean, it seems like a simple idea that's actually, you know, historic, rooted in all our ancestors. Mm-hmm. We're connected to a piece of land where we grew food. But over the past 100 years, we've moved away from that. Castle Point Numa is the company that has put forward this proposal. It also comes from a bit of a selfish place, because this is actually built in the identity of both my partner, who's my brother-in-law, and I, a community that we want to live in and that we want to raise our children in. So we've been sharing this far and wide and getting a wide range of responses from everything from how dare you to I've been waiting for something like this to exist. And when you're proposing innovative rural uses outside of the settlement boundary, you're always going to be met with, some roadblocks from policy, from mm-hmm. the legal standpoint. But what's unique in the town of Blue Mountains, and it may be, it may exist in your municipality and others listening today, is that there is a approved policy under the official plan of the town of Blue Mountains for residential farm cooperatives. Okay. And the interesting nuance with a residential farm cooperative, specifically in the town of Blue Mountains, is that town staff originally wrote this policy for farmers to have introduced families into farming, but in an extended family. So if your cousin or your brother-in-law was going to move in with you on your 200 acres and more of a commercial style farm, but could pool in resources in the same way. We know commercial farming is going the way of the dinosaurs, or it's going towards an industrial scale, or it's just disappearing completely. So we actually are looking at this policy and saying, this is the new, this is the answer, how you get families into farming, the same way you originally drafted the policy, but looking at it, not necessarily families connected through blood, but families connected through shared principles and shared desires.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, you know, so much to say on that, right? Because I can see that happening in my community and certainly in my online community as well. A lot of people are sort of moving this, you know, it's almost like a renewed back to the land type of movement that we saw in the 70s, you know what I mean? But with a completely different frame of reference now, where not only are people feeling disconnected from their food, but they're also starting to see things like food costs are rising. They're seeing the sort of disintegration of real community, you know, in real life people and connecting with people, you know, in your local town. And so I think a lot of people are really longing for that. And, you know, as you said, I mean, this is not an old concept. This is actually how people lived pretty well since the dawn of, I don't want to say the dawn of time, but certainly with the dawn of agriculture and settling, you know. But you, I wanted to circle back to something. You said that you've received some sort of resistance and how dare you. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, there's, I mean, listen, in any small town, rural-based community, there's going to be a history of farming, and there's going to be a community of farmers that, you know, they, and rightly so, are hesitant towards change. You know, they've seen policy change for the worse that has potentially impacted their lands or the use of their lands with greenfield expansion, or let's say, you know, impacts to the greenbelt, for instance, which is sort of very timely. So there's, you're always going to be met with that hesitation. I think the difference with our proposal is that it's actually rooted in agricultural, and it's an actually way to expand on the agricultural community. We've dedicated 60% of our 152 acres towards passive recreational open space and active agriculture. So a 52 acres of active farming will exist on the 152 acre site. There's another layer to our site, which makes it even a little bit more unique and more suitable, is that the former entitlements on the site were for an 18-hole golf course, an 18-hole par three golf course. So when you're comparing apples to apples for what's a more sensitive use of land, we all know the toll that a golf course takes, whether from the clear and burn approach to what goes into developing and the maintenance of those lands. So we feel our suit is ideal because no one wants to see another golf course, specifically in this area and at this key corner in the town of Blue Mountains. And the opportunity to deliver this landmark community that could be a precedent, cornerstone, how we can build new resilient communities that have that meaningful connection.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, say no more about golf courses, right? We've got a bunch of them around here. And
you know it well. Yeah.
I know it well. Yeah. I mean, they're everywhere. And chemicals and all of the pesticides and herbicides and whatever that they're using, you know, plus, of course, just the degradation of green space, right? But from what I could see on the map, it seems like you have designated a bunch of, you know, I'd say, quote unquote, wild areas, right? There seems to be some forested areas and stuff like that. So would you classify the vision here as something that would be along the lines of organic regenerative type of agriculture? You know, because from what I can see anyway, it's not like you've got giant monocrops. So is that fair to say, like the regenerative?
Absolutely. So we're inspired by this, the worldwide movement, which I think it sounds like you and your community are partaking in, which is about a human scale regenerative agriculture. And, you know, seeing bountiful results from pivoting away from large tracts and, industrial type tilling and pesticide use. Those like Jean-Marc Fontier, and there's a local group called Harvest Moon Farms that we're actually partnering with. They've actually joined our agricultural advisory board. We're going into this eyes wide open that regenerative farms, small scale farming is not an easy task.
No.
It's a science that's currently constantly evolving. And it's one that we're inspired by and one that we are dedicated to put forward across our 52 acre farm. So you're going to see, you're not going to see monocropping. You're going to see a diverse crop mix, everything from nut forest to berry plots to, some really innovative things with regenerative crops that we're going to put forward. And we are going to have, our community will be created by way of a vacant land condominium. And that is for a very specific reason, because through a vacant land condominium, each homesteader will have an obligation to maintain the farm through what would be a common element.
Okay.
And there will be a common element fee. So every month you will pay in the order of magnitude of $300, $400. And that cost will go towards your snow removal, your garbage removal, but also to support a full-time farm manager. The full-time farm manager will actually be educated and have a deep background in small-scale regenerative farming. And they will work with your family on your desires and needs for consumption of both fresh produce and vegetables, fresh produce and fruits. And they will help steer your crops and work with you throughout the season. And that would be fed through a capital budget that all the homesteaders are contributing to.
Wow. That sounds amazing. And I have a couple of more detailed questions, I guess, because I know there's people out there who are burning here with what you're talking about. Yeah. So I know of some communities that have tried to sort of set up this cooperative type of model and basically put, like, we can get into the weeds if we want, but basically put what they're saying is, you know, someone buys up, let's say 200 acres of land or something like that, and then they find like-minded people to live on the land, maybe to build, etc., and then they all farm together, right? Now, with what you're saying, from what I can understand, is are people actually building houses on this property, or are they living on it full time, or how does that work?
Absolutely. Yeah, okay. So we're not creating lots like a typical plan of subdivision. We're creating units of land, and they're registered by way of vacant land condominium.
So what does that mean? I know it's technical.
What that means is that it's a piece of land, and that piece of land has an obligation. That piece of land has an obligation to the balance of the 152 acres, and you're tied to that through your ownership and also your responsibility to fund it, what would be a capital budget that's put forward by a condo board, or let's say in this type, the residential farm community board, of what they are producing and what they want to maintain on that site. So there's the benefit of ownership. So you're seeing, you're controlling the value and you're controlling the perimeter of your site, but you're also making a meaningful contribution to make sure that this continues on in perpetuity and is protected to not be unraveled.
Nice. And then how many proposed lots are there on the 152 acres?
So on the 152 acres, we have proposed 37 homesteads. Okay. Each lot is approximately 1.2 to 1.5 acres.
Okay.
And, there's 7 kilometers of walking trails across 152 acres. And, we're currently reviewing some attainable housing options, how we could potentially introduce smaller lots with potentially prefabricated or modular homes.
Yeah.
So that we can really have a diverse, complete community here at Thornbury Acres.
Yeah, because there's plenty of people. I mean, I just think of tiny houses, right? That sort of comes to mind. And there's lots of people that are wanting to go that route. We have some people here in our community that have homesteads of, let's say, 2 to 3 acres, and then they actually have other families live on that homestead with them.
Yes.
In tiny houses, right? So they'll sort of have like one main house and then tiny houses, and that's the sort of community.
Yeah, we want to be, we're aiming to be as inclusive as possible, and there's power in numbers, because there's going to be more people to contribute to the budget as far as pushing that farm manager forward, bringing in farm hands where extra help were required, but also tending to the farm themselves personally.
Yeah, so that was going to be my next question. So people are actually, just to sort of, because we're doing audio here mostly, if people, so let's say you have 152 acres, you got all these different types of crops and wild areas and what have you, Now, the families that are occupying that, that are living there, are they tending to all of those things, or do they sort of have their own, like, garden, so to speak?
There's dedicated market plots on the farm. So each family has a dedicated 800-square-foot market plot. That they would work with the farm manager, and that would probably be their house, you know, that would respond to their direct household needs and their desires and wants. And then there would be the balance of generic fruit orchards, nut trees, sort of food forests, berry pick patch, squash, pumpkin, some seasonal, harder skin vegetables that would come through. And depending on how much or how little you participate, there would be a sliding scale.
Okay.
And you would be able to benefit in it from those. But the intention is that all of the vegetables and fruits grown on the sites are going to benefit the community. Anything that's in excess would potentially go back out to a revenue stream to help subsidize the costs. But we have a pro forma. This is a very comprehensive proposed residential farm cooperative backed by an actual 52-page agriculture viability report by an agricultural scientist and an agronomist who have studied the soils, who have studied the frost freeze days, and have put forward a number of crops that we're actually going to be incubating before we break ground on our farm and before we bring our community in to find out what is succeeding, because we want to hit the ground running and we want to be robust and bountiful. And we actually want to create an open door to the community. We see Thornbury Acres as not only closed in to serve us, our existing 37 families that we're going to have on the site, that are going to live on the site, but opportunities to serve others and actually be a bit of a platform and an educational resource for those who want to come in, learn about a small scale regenerative farming, and potentially have pop-up farmers markets and, you know, really build on the agricultural community through those opportunities.
Nice. Well, I tell you, the vision is awesome. Like, I got to tell you, now that I'm actually sitting and talking with you, because I mean, the website is the website, right? And it's got some cool stuff on there, but I think that you've just really elaborated on a lot of other things that are not on there. Yeah. And you know, the way I see what you're doing is it's almost like a blueprint that others could follow elsewhere. Right. I would actually say elsewhere in the world, minus all of the legalities and local policies and laws and stuff like that. Yeah. I mean, the model itself is something that could be duplicated everywhere, in my mind.
That's what really gets us excited, Brett. And we've brought in an incredible team from, like I said, our agricultural advisory board to our landscape architect to our engineer. And my direction to the entire team was, I want to be as sensitive as possible to the land, and I want to deliver something that's going to thrive. And I couldn't be more excited about the proposal that's sitting on the desk today at Gray County in the town of Blue Mountains for approval. And we've already hosted our first public open house. We had 76 members from the community at the local library come out. I would say 90% of them were asking when they could move in and
no doubt,
move more. And we hope we will see approvals later this year, and we will be hopefully breaking ground sometime in 2024.
Awesome. Yeah, that was going to be my next question, is what do you see as the timeline? So 2024, I mean, yeah, we're coming into the growing season now in the next month or two. So yeah, obviously you're not ready for that.
We're going to be incubating this year. I don't want to, we have an opportunity to do some trials, and I don't want to miss the growing season, as I know you're eager to get out there, as are we. I think we're going to be going forward with some butternut squash and some other fall crops that are sort of center of the road to see how our soil and our climate on this specific site performs. But we're very eager, and this is a model that I hope will be replicated, and that we are starting to get some feedback of, can you look at our municipality, even from town officials across Ontario. But it's specific to the policy, and potentially this is where a movement could happen where people could lobby. You know, an official plan, I think it has to come up every 10 years to be rewritten.
Okay.
And maybe every municipality across Ontario could have a residential farm cooperative. And, it's not to say that you're opening the floodgates for intense development outside of settlement areas. There's very specific thresholds, like having 60% of the land allocated for the agricultural use. It is a tough one to meet. And It takes scale or it takes small scale. And I think that can benefit various developments.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the challenges we have in Canada, right, is, you know, you're so far north that your growing season is short. And if you screw something up one season, you got to wait another year. So scale takes time. You know, you can't, and, I mean, obviously you have the luxury of having scientists and farmers and what have you actually do soil analyses. So your likelihood of things, you know, turning out good first time around is probably quite high. But, you know, you have a bad year, there's not enough rain, the shape of the land, the pitch of the land. I mean, there's all these variables that come into play and you don't really know how it's going to pan out until you do it. So last question, and you don't necessarily need to divulge any numbers or anything like that, but I'm sure people are wondering, like, when you look at a plot of land that size, is this a cooperative ownership of that land or does someone else own the land? Like, how does that whole arrangement work? Because there are farmers around here that have significant properties, and I would just wonder if we had to sort of take something like this to them and say, hey, this is what our intention is. Like, how does that work?
Yeah, all the magic, Brett, happens with that vacant land condominium. And the best way I can describe it is, think of a condo tower. And once that, a developer owns the land, they build the tower and they sell the units. Mm-hmm. And then effectively that entire residential community owns that tower. They own the exteriors, they own the amenities, they own the parking, and they're responsible for that through their common element fees. The same way here, the whole 152 acres is owned by the 37 homesteaders.
Okay.
And they are also, you know, responsible. They are now going to assemble a board and they will steer that land. And that is where the collective ownership lies. And they have an opportunity to sell. And someone might want to step into their shoes, but anybody who's going to step into this type of development, it's onerous. There's going to be a commitment, both financially, both from time, and both from a culture. So it's, you know, I've been fielding a lot of inquiries about who's going to live here. It's going to be very intentional. And we've got a prospective family wait list right now. People don't believe, you know, a lot of the counselors in town of Blue Mounds are like, no one's going to live here. And it's like, you know, let me build it and let's see who comes.
I beg to differ. You're going to have a wait list forever.
And I think that's what's really exciting is to go into this new territory. And what we're very mindful of is that we're going to do it. We're going to do it successfully, and we're going to set it up in perpetuity. That this thing is going to be a great model for hopefully other small towns across Ontario to follow, and to potentially lobby their own councillors to, you know, introduce this type of policy if it doesn't exist. But it may exist today.
Yeah. Well, on that note, I mean, this was an awesome conversation. Thanks so much for carving out a bit of time, and love what you're up to. I mean, this is right up my alley. I think a lot of people are, you know, when we hear a lot of chatter about intentional communities, but I don't think anyone really has a clear vision of what that actually looks like, because it's not just about, hey, we're all going to live together and live happily ever after, and there we go. It's like, no, there's a lot of layers of complexity. There's all the regulatory side of things. There's how does the model work? Who does what? You know, so there's a lot of context there for people to think about. But love what you're up to. Awesome. Yeah.
I appreciate it. We're at thornburyacres.com. There's an email there to connect with us directly. And I look forward to keeping you posted and having you out on the site to see the farm once we're up and running.
Definitely. All right. Well, thanks so much again, Harley. And for those of you listening out there or watching, if we publish the video, definitely share this. You know, there's a lot of you out there are into this kind of stuff. And we've got some permaculture stuff coming up soon on the podcast as well. So this is the time now to really start thinking about these types of things and sharing this with people who are like-minded, who are looking for something like this. This is a great model. So Harley, thanks so much once again for your time. All right, I really appreciate it.
Awesome, Brett. Thanks, man.